Hello and welcome. Welcome to the Super Show. Welcome to the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on arrowheadaddict.com. It's about to get absolutely bonkers here because we're going to be recapping what the Kansas City Chiefs did on the road against the Atlanta Falcons, beating an NFC Super Bowl contender in incredible fashion the week after going to Denver and beating an AFC Super Bowl contender. Then another contender coming to town on Thursday on the same exact show. Right now, this episode will be previewing the Chiefs dealing with the Oakland Raiders at home on Thursday Night Football tomorrow night. There's just so much to talk about. The Chiefs keep making statements, and they keep making it against different types of teams. The Chiefs have racked up win after win after win against contenders that play football different ways. The biggest test is going to be happening tomorrow night. But before we go in and figure out if the Chiefs can beat the Raiders at home, let's go back to Sunday to see what they did to beat Atlanta. It seems like maybe Andy Reid has figured out what's going on here. The Kansas City Chiefs have beaten two playoff teams on the road back-to-back weeks. Road playoff wins back-to-back weeks. The kind of thing that wildcard teams have to do to get to the AFC Championship game. Or if you want to look at what the Chiefs have done against their last playoff caliber opponents, you know, they go on the road and beat the Raiders, or on the road and beat the Colts, or on the road and beat the Panthers, or on the road and beat the Broncos, or on the road and beat the Falcons. That's how teams get to the Super Bowl. Just pointing that out real quick. But it seems like Andy Reid might have a handle on this Chiefs team. It may have taken him 3 years here. But I after watching the game against the Atlanta Falcons, and after watching the different ways that Reid attacked these other teams, the Chiefs just scored 30 points against the Broncos and 29 points against the Falcons. They won those games by 3 points and 1 point, respectively, against the Broncos and Falcons. But they're playing in different ways, and the way I think it was best summed up here was by a real MN Chiefs fan on Twitter, Seth Keezer. He does a great job. He said, one thing to consider, the Chiefs beat, on back-to-back weekends, two polar opposite types of teams. It says something good about the Chiefs. And it so does about Andy Reid also. I said before this Falcons game, I said Andy Reid has got to figure out what this offense is capable of and how to create points against bad defenses and how to get more aggressive with this exact squad. Because whenever the Chiefs get aggressive late in games, they start to do good things. And in this game, as we'll go through the play-by-play in a little while, the Chiefs were aggressive and did great things. Look at what Alex Smith did against the Blitz on Sunday. Alex Smith versus the Falcons Blitz, a stat that came through Twitter. He was 6-for-6 for 95 yards, a touchdown, and a perfect quarterback rating. Those aren't all checkdowns, and now some of those were short passes that were significantly improved by yards after the catch, but just against the Blitz, Alex Smith was perfect. And Alex Smith has always been good against the Blitz. I think last year he had the statistics of he was a better quarterback than Tom Brady against the Blitz last year. So teams don't blitz him very often, and I'm sure that the Raiders will learn from that, and that Alex Smith won't see even 6 blitzes on pass plays. That's just speculating for Thursday. But Andy Reid finally, I think, acknowledged, especially going up against a bad defense, that if they were going to beat the Falcons, they were going to have to do it by playing their own brand of aggressive football. And I was surprised to see the Atlanta Falcons end up finishing this game with 28 points. I'm surprised that the Falcons scored 28 points against the Chiefs defense. I also think they did the right thing. I think the defense did enough. The Broncos scoring 27 even in overtime. The Broncos scoring 27 was more surprising to me after what we've seen the Chiefs do against good offenses. But I think everybody could have come into this game and say, well, the Chiefs are probably going to need 30 points to win this game. They needed 29. I ended up being a slightly lower scoring game than that. But Andy Reid came in, and right out of the gate, the Chiefs were aggressive. The defense was put on their heels early on by Julio Jones. Then they matched, and then they got put on their heels, and they matched, and they put on their heels and matched. This was an offensive shootout type of game against, I think, in all likelihood, the best offense in football. Certainly a top 5 offense, probably top 3 offense across the board, everyone would agree. probably the best offense in the NFC. The only offense I'm going to be more scared of across the board would be Pittsburgh. And the Chiefs are simply a different team since they played the Steelers. They just played an offensive shootout game. They just had almost 60 points total in a game against an offensive juggernaut type of team. And won. And won the week after playing the best defense in football. The Broncos have the best defense, the most talented defense, the deepest defense, the strongest defense. Last year, a historically great defense in football. The best. The best defense they beat last week. One of the best offenses they beat this last week. If you're not encouraged by that, there's no, you're never going to be encouraged by anything. And I am cynical, and I am been beaten down by the Chiefs for as long as I've been a Chiefs fan, and I watch Chiefs games looking for the cracks in the armor so I can be prepared for the letdown. That's just how I watch Chiefs football now. Because I've never had a reason to be optimistic. In these last 2 weeks, this whole season, since the bye week has been incredible, the stumbling block against the Buccaneers, if you would have told me, and this is a false setup because I wouldn't have believed that the Raiders are going to be this good. I have them being good. I didn't have them being 10-2 good. But if you were to tell me the Chiefs were going to lose one game after their bye week, which again, it was at Raiders versus Saints, at Colts versus Jags, at Panthers versus Buccaneers, at Broncos, at Falcons. If you would have told me before the bye week, before the season, the Chiefs were going to lose one of those games, I would have been absolutely ecstatic. If you would have told me the Chiefs were going to just lose to the Buccaneers, I would have been terrified. Go, oh God, if they're losing to the Buccaneers, they're probably losing at Oakland and versus the Saints and at the Colts and maybe at the Panthers and at the Broncos. They lost one game after the bye week so far. That's incredible. The Chiefs are 9-3. And yes, if the Chiefs went back to Houston, if they put the Texans again in Houston right now, I would take the Chiefs and win on the road. If they went back to the Steelers, it would not be 43-14. If they had the Buccaneers at home again at any point, I think yes, the Chiefs, especially healthier, I'd say yes, the Chiefs beat the Buccaneers at home. Because right now I think there are like 5 teams in football better than the Chiefs. Maybe 5. Maybe less than that. Not more than 5. Who are you going to put on that list right now? Not the Broncos. Not the Falcons. The Chiefs would be both of those teams on the road. Man, winning road playoff games is so hard in the NFL. Like, there's a reason that home field advantage is such a big deal. Because winning road football games is just harder. And the Chiefs went on the road. They've lost 2 road games this year, both before the bye week. The Chiefs have gone on the road this year and won in Oakland, in Indianapolis, in Carolina, in Denver, in Atlanta. There's not a team in football that has 5 better road wins than that. Most teams don't have 5 road wins. I know the Patriots do, and the Raiders do, and the Cowboys do. I don't know how many other teams even have 5 road wins, and none of those teams I just mentioned have records as impressive on the road as the Chiefs do with the teams that they've beaten. And at this point, you could tell me that the Chiefs in the playoffs would have to go to Cincinnati or to Baltimore. I guess to Baltimore in the first round. And I go, yeah, they've beaten teams better than Baltimore on the road so far this year. They could do that. And then what? Then they go to Oakland? Yeah, I could see that. Then to New England? Not going to be tough, but they went to Atlanta and to Denver. And I'm extremely encouraged by what the Chiefs have done on the road. Now, this week on Thursday, they're getting the Raiders at home, evening the playing field. And if they win that, then they might not have to deal with playing any road games in the playoff until the AFC Championship game. If they beat the Raiders at home on Thursday Night Football, then all of a sudden they're leading the AFC West. Both the Raiders and the Chiefs are 10-3. The Chiefs have the tiebreakers over everyone else in the division. Then look at what the Chiefs would have to do from there. Take care of the Titans at home. Should be very doable. Take care of the Broncos at home. That's a challenge. And take care of the Chargers on the road. Those are 2 difficult games, and the Titans are not a pushover team. But if the Chiefs win those 3 games, after taking care of the Raiders at home, the Chiefs at least have the 2 seed in the AFC. At least. They at least have the 2 seed in the AFC. It's a first round bye, then a home field playoff game, and then the AFC championship game in New England. Or if the Patriots lose, the Patriots are 10-2 right now, and the Chiefs have 2 losses to AFC teams, I think that would be the first tiebreaker. The Patriots lost to the Bills, so if they lose to the Ravens or at the Broncos or versus the Jets or at the Dolphins, then the Chiefs are playing the tiebreaker game with the Patriots, or the Patriots lose 2 games of these last 4, which again, versus Ravens, at Broncos, versus Jets, at Dolphins, the Chiefs are in the conversation to host the AFC Championship game. And yes, you can start to nitpick and say, well, if the Chiefs could have just gone to Houston or could have just taken care of business at home against the Buccaneers, then we could be talking about this team being 15-1. And yeah, we could be, but that's just not where this team is right now. And I don't know what the team would look like if they had gone into the bye week 3-1. I don't know how Andy Reid develops. At this point, we can't move backwards here. Let's take the Chiefs where they are right now, which is a couple of incredible road wins in a row on their way now to the 2 seed. I can't find much to complain about there. And now, sort of steering away from the big picture and back to the small picture, what happened last week, we can keep learning about what's going to happen next by what just happened. Here's what the defensive snap count looked like for the Chiefs last week against the Falcons, okay? The Falcons had 74 offensive snaps, so obviously the Chiefs' defense had 74 defensive snaps. Justin Houston only played 46 of them, which was more than I expected because he was very quiet in this game. But he was banged up in his second game back. He had the shoulder injury against the Broncos. I heard somebody say that he stepped on someone's leg and kind of tweaked his ankle during the game. He played 46 snaps, was very quiet. Dee Ford was back against the Falcons. He played 27 snaps. And it makes sense that he was limited coming into the game, questionable with a hamstring injury. I'm not surprised that he was limited there. But Dee Ford, very limited. Played about half the snaps. Tamba Hali got 35 snaps, which was less than Frank Zombo's 41. That pass rush is still not healthy, but a few more days of rest and a few more days of maintenance, it's going to be a really tough time for Derek Carr. Derek Johnson played all 74 snaps because he's healthy and a monster. In the secondary, Peters played all 74. Steven Nelson played 73. Terrence Mitchell played 36 snaps. And DJ White didn't see the field, which I thought was interesting. I think DJ White's had some nice bright spots. It's kind of one of those rotating corners trying to pick up some slack back there. Phillip Gaines didn't play. He was injured. He was not in the game. Not active for the game. Defensive line was interesting. Dontari Poe got 48 snaps. Chris Jones got 43. Raheem Nunez-Rochas got 38. Kendall Reyes, TJ Barnes, and Jarvis Jenkins all had between 17 and 20. That is a deep, deep rotation for a team that lost 2 of its starters with Jay Howard and Alan Bailey. Also, Chris Jones has the most hurries for 3-4 defensive ends since week 7. He has 21 in that time, leading the league in hurries for 3-4 defensive ends. There is depth and there is power here. And I think now, with what they've done lately, with especially these last 2 games, I think the Kansas City Chiefs have walked up to the desk of the rest of the NFL and smacked their resume on top of it and said, "Hello, we're the Kansas City Chiefs. We formally demand your respect. Look at what we've done." But the NFL's tricky, and media coverage is fickle. You can demand respect in a couple of wins like this, and people are going to interpret it all kinds of different ways. Some people now are saying, oh, you know, it's just the Falcons being the Falcons. Or last week it was, oh, well, that's the limitations of the Broncos with Trevor Siemian. Or man, the Chiefs are just finding these ways to win. And that's fine with me, man. I really could not possibly care less about how the Chiefs are received nationally. I really, really don't. In fact, like, I have a Sports Illustrated on my wall from the Royals winning the World Series. And it says, "Make it rain." The subhead for it is how the resilient Royals ran off with a World Series title no one saw coming. That is the Royals World Series win in 2015 that came directly after they were in the World Series and lost it the year before. The idea that no one saw that World Series title coming is insane. They got second place the year before. Winning it the year after totally makes sense. They were the AL champions in 2014. They won it all in 2015. How did anyone not see that coming? That no one saw coming. The Royals didn't get, quote-unquote, media respect even when they won it. And, man, do you think anybody cares? Do you think anybody in Kansas City cares? Do you think anybody has this Sports Illustrated on their wall somewhere and goes, man, that World Series win was just really ruined by that crummy subheading? And now, and the Chiefs are doing it in a way similar to the Royals. It comes up on Twitter every time the Chiefs win some ridiculous game, like when Eric Berry has the first ever, like, lead-taking pick two of all time, the first one that's ever happened in the NFL. There is this undefinable something going on where I really, every time I watch these Chiefs games, they're just like, wow, they should have lost this game. They had no business actually winning this game, be it Carolina or Denver or Atlanta, those three games especially. I watch those games, and at the end of it, or even halfway through, I'm going, oh, this is where the Chiefs lose it. Like, they played well, but the other team's coming back, or they got behind, they have to come back, or something is happening here that makes me question if they're going to be able to win this game. And then all of a sudden, I'm looking over my shoulder as I'm typing something in the notes for these shows, look over and see, oh, the Chiefs just did something insane. Something absurd just happened. Marcus Peters just pulled the ball out of Kelvin Benjamin's hand. Or the Chiefs just drove the length of the field in a couple of minutes for a touchdown and a two-point conversion and an overtime win and a field goal getting doinked off of the upright and going through. Or they go blow for blow with the Falcons and then it return a two-point conversion for 2 points of their own to take the lead right back. Crazy, stupid stuff. Just stuff you can't plan. Things that just happen. And at some point, this is the thing I have the hardest time believing for the Chiefs, because it's just not that quantifiable. But I saw the Royals do this. I hate the idea that teams just find a way to win. You know, the thing I really like about this team is they just find a way to win. And I can't quantify that. There's no way to analyze that. You can't put a statistic on there anywhere. And it's what people said about Tim Tebow. Like, oh, he just wins. Well, no, he's still got, you know, horrendous problems as a quarterback. The Chiefs still have problems as a team, but they keep finding ways to win and doing it in different ways and not doing it in completely fluky ways. They've done it a half a dozen times. There have been wins like that that have been on the fence. Go, well, this could go either way. And, oh, the Chiefs are the team that made the play. Every time. Every time except for the Buccaneers game, the Chiefs have been the team that makes a play at the end. It just keeps happening. Since the bye week, every single game since the week 5 bye week, there's been a chance for a team to make a play, or every time there has been a chance for a team to make a play, every game except for the Tampa game, the Chiefs have been the team to do it, and they've been doing it against really good teams. I think I had the Chiefs losing 3 in a row coming into the season of this stretch. No, I guess just 2 in a row. I had them probably beating the Buccaneers and then losing at Denver and at Atlanta. I was saying, why even play the game at Carolina? Because I didn't know how bad the Panthers were going to be this year. But especially at Denver and at Atlanta, nobody on the planet had the Chiefs winning those two games back-to-back. All right, let's talk about how the Chiefs did, in fact, win in Atlanta, as I'd still try to just accept the fact that maybe the Chiefs have some sort of playmaking magic that we just can't totally quantify. Kansas City Chiefs 29, Atlanta Falcons 28. I'm calling a little bit of an audible here for this episode because I want to get to this Raiders game, so we're going to do kind of a a high-paced Cliff's Notes version of this recap, because I do want to go drive-by-drive so you get the pacing of the game, but we'll kind of zip through it. On the first drive, the Falcons just absolutely chunked down the field. They moved quickly. Ryan got rid of the ball faster than the rush could get to him, and the Chiefs missed tackles the whole drive. Julio Jones for 11, Julio for 16, Julio for 17. In the red zone, the Falcons went back and forth a little bit, got a pass interference on Daniel Sorensen, eventually ended in a touchdown to Devonta Freeman, making it 7-0 Falcons. On that opening drive, Matt Ryan was 6-for-6 for 67 yards, 10 plays for 81 yards on the whole drive. It was all too easy, and Julio Jones was absolutely dominant. But after the game, Matt Ryan said on 680 The Fan that the Chiefs switched from a single high safety in the first series to a double high safety to double high safeties for the rest of the game in order to double Julio Jones from there on out. And it worked, because Julio had, I think, 5 receptions on that first drive off the top of my head. He ended the game with 7. Julio ended the game with 7 receptions for 113 yards. With the double high safeties, what it allowed them to do, at least in my understanding of it, is it basically devoted one safety to helping wherever Julio Jones was, and then also still kept the safety back there for the rest of the defense. One thing that I think this might have shown itself in a little bit is it limits who you can bring at the quarterback. If you're always doubling Julio Jones, you have limited options for how you're going to get to Matt Ryan, and the pass rush was not very effective in this game. For either team, really. I think Alex Smith was only sacked one time. Matt Ryan was only sacked twice. As I mentioned earlier, Dee Ford and Justin Houston were both a little bit limited and both very quiet in this game. And I think there's a really good chance of that changing against Oakland. But the Chiefs need to be able to have a second cornerback who you don't feel like you always have to give help to. Julio Jones demands it. That's fine. I understand that. And it worked out in this game, obviously. But it does limit the creativity you can have in which to use to get to the quarterback. So that was a problem that happened with the Chiefs moving to double high safety. But it obviously needed to happen to stop Julio Jones. The Chiefs answer with some really wonderful stuff from Alex Smith here. First down, play action end around to Tyreek Hill. Picked up 18 yards right out of the gate. Then in the next play, Smith throws a bullet to a wide-open Travis Kelce for 21, another first down. Then again, from the 38-yard line, Smith throws a perfect over-the-shoulder dart to Kelce again for 35, down to the 3. Then the next play, Spencer Ware on the left side for a touchdown. The point after was blocked, which was annoying, but 7-6 Falcons then after that. I mean, just a perfect drive, and maybe most shockingly, an incredibly fast drive. The Falcons went down and scored there that first drive, 10 plays, 81 yards. The Chiefs answered by using 4 plays to go 72 yards. They picked up 70 of those yards in 3 plays because they needed to get those last 2 yards just to get into the end zone. The last 3 yards, I guess, so 69 yards on 4 plays. I'm on three plays. 69 yards on 3 plays for the Chiefs, and then the touchdown right after. I mean, just doing absolute surgery. The Falcons ended up answering with a field goal because the Chiefs have been holding up very well. They almost held up in that first drive. If it wasn't for that Daniel Sorensen pass interference call, the Chiefs only would have given up a field goal on that first drive, even with Julio just marching down the field with him. But the Falcons drove again and ended up getting into the 7-yard line. A run for 4 got the Falcons to the 7-yard line. 2nd and 5, Coleman got 3. Then on 3rd and 2, Justin Houston got a very timely sack, and Matt Bryant hit the field goal. And I tweeted at this time, as it was 10-6 Falcons, that if the Chiefs lose this game, I want it to be because the offense pushed too hard. Conservative calls were going to lose in this game, I thought, and it would have been right. And it's time for those risks. And the Chiefs kept doing risky things. Back on offense, D'Anthony Thomas got across the 20 on the kick return. Then Ware got an 8-yard gain after breaking for 2 or 3 yards after getting hit. On 2nd and 2, a jet sweep to D'Anthony Thomas picked up 23 yards. And I think I might have to amend my jet sweep moratorium here. Don't run jet sweeps with anybody but Tyreek Hill or maybe D'Anthony Thomas. I can also allow those now because I forget how fast he can be on those little end-arounds. So that picks up 23 yards. And then the Chiefs end up actually fumbling the ball away on 3rd down. A rush got to Smith. He stepped up, and a rusher came from behind him and knocked the ball away for a strip sack and a Falcons recovery. That was very bad news. You cannot do that. You cannot do that on the road as probably the inferior team. Certainly on the road, just even as an evenly matched team. That was terrifying. The Falcons got the ball back there. And the Falcons got back into an offensive groove, and they ended up, by the end of the first quarter, ended up having six penalties against the Chiefs had been called, which gave the Falcons a bunch of free yards, which you don't need to do against a really good offense. But so the Falcons had the ball all the way through the end of the first quarter. In the second quarter, the Falcons continue to drive. They get to first and goal from the two. And Matt Ryan rolls out right. Chris Jones got to him before Ryan could get his eyes up. A tremendous quick move by Chris Jones. Just an incredible pressure. Second down, Freeman goes to the left. He was corralled by Tom Bahali in the whole defensive line. Then on third down, Ryan threw to the back of the end zone over his wide receiver. A flag was actually thrown on Terrence Mitchell, was almost the huge culprit there. But it was picked up, which was terrifying. And the Falcons settle for a field goal again. So it makes it 13-6 Falcons. And I want to talk about why I think this was happening. Therese Paylor had a stupendous tweet that I retweeted during the game at JB Briscoe. But I think we can just talk about it now. The reason I think the Chiefs have been so good in the red zone, especially against the Falcons, is whenever the Falcons have the whole field to work with, they're a much scarier offense. Whenever you consider, just think logically about the options that the Falcons have if you're throwing from the 40-yard line, from their own 40-yard line, 60 yards from the end zone. Well, they can run the ball with Devonta Freeman, who is very good in this game, has really looked like a tremendous running back, just keeps getting better. You can run it any direction with Devonta Freeman. That's terrifying. You can run a screen. The Falcons with Kyle Shanahan have done some really tremendous screen blocking and some tremendous scheming for short pass plays. That entire playbook is there. You can give it to Julio across the middle, give him an 8-yard slant of some sort. That's hard to defend against anybody, especially against a guy as good as Julio Jones. You can stretch the field with Julio or one of your quicker receivers, but Matt Ryan or Julio Jones for 60 yards is still in the playbook. You have to defend all sorts of deep options, even if you just send Julio deep to free up some screen stuff on the other side of the field. That's not only pulling, we know that because of the double high safeties, that's not just pulling the cornerback with him, it's also pulling that safety that is devoted to helping cover Julio Jones. Well, if you want to just use Julio Jones as a decoy, you have an advantage there because he's taking two guys with him. Julio Jones is always taking two guys with him if what Matt Ryan said is accurate. So there are, you have the full playbook. You have every threat possible if you're the Falcons playing from, 60 yards out. Once you get within the 10, or within the 5, or within the 2, then all that begins to change a little bit. Then it's just offense versus defense, man versus man. Well, you can give it to Devonta Freeman, and he can, try to punch it through, just like any team can. And that can happen with literally any team in football. If you're on the 2-yard line, you can say, well, we can give it to our running back and see if we can just punch it through. That's an option. But the Chiefs have a really strong defensive front, so that's a pretty solid matchup most of the time. Or you could say, well, we have Julio Jones. That's a giant target. We could heave it to him somewhere in the end zone and have a jump ball happen. And that's true, but any team could do that. Could just throw it to their tallest, most talented guy. And Julio Jones is a better red zone target than almost anybody else in football. But that's not unstoppable. That's not changing how you play defense. You want to do a run play to an edge and test the speed of the Chiefs' defense? Well, that's worked out really well because everybody from Chris Jones to Justin Houston to Dee Ford to Marcus Peters has really good closing speed on this defense. The playbook starts to get more and more cut down, and it becomes less and less about the type of play that you run and just about the physicality of the guys in that 7 yards or so. I guess 12 yards, the 2 yards outside of the end zone and the 10 yards into the end zone on run plays, on pass plays, I mean. It's just the physicality of the team. And the Chiefs' defense has most advantages in the red zone, which is tremendous because the advantage that they don't have is the most important one. They don't know the play. They don't know what the quarterback is trying to do. That's the biggest advantage in the red zone, is knowing what the play is. And only the offense has that. Even then, the Chiefs are tremendous inside of the red zone, inside of the 10, inside the 5 lately. So I think that's why the Chiefs were able to consistently hold the Falcons to field goals so many times. And again, it would have been 9-6 if the Chiefs would have not gotten that penalty on Daniel Sorensen. So the Falcons had kept moving the ball quickly, and the Chiefs' defense couldn't keep up until they got to the red zone. And the Chiefs' offense at this point in the game needed to do the same thing. They needed to get the Falcons back on their heels. And again, without the Daniel Sorensen PI called, the Chiefs would have had 3 red zone stops. Even now, at this point in the game, 2 field goals and 1 touchdown could have been much, much worse. As I said during the game on Twitter, Atlanta became much more predictable in the red zone, and the Chiefs were a Daniel Sorensen interference call away from giving up 9 points instead of 13. Here's Therese Paylor's exact tweet for the point I was just making off the top of my head. I had it in my notes this whole time. Paylor said, Atlanta is running the ball between the 10s because of their field stretching ability, but they're not winning up front when the field is condensed. That's where the Chiefs' defense shines. So the Chiefs get the ball back, a bad D'Anthony Thomas return and a holding penalty has the Chiefs starting only at the 8. We can skip ahead to 3rd and 11, which has just been hopeless for the Chiefs, right? Oh, by the way, sorry, let's back up. 2nd and 11, I got a bone to pick. 2nd and 11 from the 20, Smith went deep to Chris Conley over his shoulder, and Chris Conley just dropped it. And I think he had 2 drops in this game, or at least refused to make his own plays. I know we want to like Chris Conley. I know the Chiefs are better if he's good. Especially, but without Jeremy Maclin for these last several weeks, Chris Conley hasn't done anything. Anything. And last year I went, well, Chris Conley not doing anything in this offense makes sense because he's a rookie and Andy Reid's system is hard for rookies to not only understand, but hard for rookies to get playing time in. It's hard to make Andy Reid trust you if you're a rookie wide receiver in his system. And well, this year Tyreek Hill's doing it, man. Tyreek Hill's the most dynamic player on this offense. 10 games into his career. 11 games into his career. Where's your Chris Conley excuse? I can't find one personally. I don't know what to do with Chris Conley anymore. He's just a big physical dude that doesn't get open. He doesn't create his own space. Whenever he does, so Alex Smith doesn't trust him. Whenever Alex Smith decides to trust him, he's dropping passes. I'm just having a hard time seeing his role on this team. Because as much as I loathe Albert Wilson sometimes, he made plays on Sunday. Not just the punt return, which we'll get to. But he made some real wide receiver plays. And man, Albert Wilson drives me crazy sometimes. He just won't stick his arms out. I bet I've tweeted half a dozen times this year during games like that I don't understand why Albert Wilson is on this team. But I'm starting to wonder why Chris Conley is. And he's on the team now. I mean, you could say if he's on the team because he's a developmental guy, that's fine. If you think you can develop that, great. He has the physical tools. But he's not getting separation. He's not getting plays completed. He's not creating any of his own plays. He's not even completing the plays that Alex Smith makes, like this deep pass over Chris Conley's shoulder. And yes, some of these are difficult catches, but if you're an NFL wide receiver, you just have to make difficult catches all the time. You just have to do that successfully. You can't only make the easy catches and be a real NFL option. So Chris Conley drops that. There's my Chris Conley soapbox for now. I had high hopes for him coming into this year, and I just don't anymore. He could probably make some plays here and there, but he at this point, I don't see him being anything other than a really poor man's possession kind of guy. Like, I was going to say compare him. I was going to compare him to Anquan Boldin, except for Chris Conley drops passes, and Anquan Boldin like now, like 2016 Anquan Boldin, not like young Anquan Boldin, because that'd be amazing. I'd be totally happy about that comparison. So the Chiefs, after that drop, get put to a hopeless 3rd and 11 after 3rd and 6 was hopeless against Denver. 3rd and 11 against the Falcons, because I forget that the Falcons have a bad defense. A hopeless 3rd and 11, and Alex Smith just throws a strike across the middle to Albert Wilson that Albert Wilson stretched into 21 yards. I think the pass traveled 10. I can't remember exactly, but a strike to Albert Wilson. Wilson extends and gets the ball and then takes it for 21. A perfect play there. Then on first down, a fake jet sweep to Tyreek Hill. Then Smith rolls out right, throws a beautiful bootleg pass to Travis Kelce. Just perfect execution. Good for 16 yards. Fast forward to 2nd and 6. A bubble screen to Travis Kelce, and Kelce rumbles down the field to the 12-yard line, for 27 yards. First down from the 12. Spencer Ware cannot get anything on a fullback depth handoff with a fake pitch to Hill. 2nd and 10. Hill gets a jet rocket sweep, according to Mitch Holthus, who I was listening to during the game. A jet rocket sweep to the left, gets a block, and gets down to the 6-yard line. Then on 3rd and 4, a throw to Hill went out wide right. Hill got a couple of yards and got down to the 3. Then on 4th and 1, This was right, Andy Reid. Andy Reid did the right thing. Andy Reid made some gutsy calls a couple times in this game, and I love it. Fourth and one. Andy Reid calls a timeout. Ware goes back alone. The play action handoff to Ware is obviously a fake handoff. Then Ware gets out in a little bit of open space, and Smith throws it right back to Ware after the play action handoff. He's wide open, catches it, touchdown. PAT is good this time, and all of a sudden it is 13-13 after a fourth and one conversion goes for the touchdown. Just musical drive again. This was the game where I feel like Andy Reid was in his zone the whole game, which is what it's been. We haven't seen that since the Colts game. And this is against a better team, a better offense, and even a better defense than what the Colts were doing. Sam Mellinger tweeted after that, the Chiefs converted 3rd and 11, 3rd and 4, and 4th and 1 on that drive. Just a tremendous drive there. Then the Falcons come out, they lose tackle Jake Matthews on the next drive. On 3rd and 3, they converted, but on 3rd and 6, they did not. Pressure got to Matt Ryan, Dontari Poe whacked Ryan, and Marcus Peters was super upset that he didn't get the pick, but it did, in fact, make the Falcons punt on that drive. Hill fielded the punt for no return. The Chiefs started at the 11. Smith whipped a short pass to Ware. Ware broke the tackle. The defender was on his back when he caught it. It was incredible. And got out to the 25. First and 10, a draw to West, went for no gain. Tyson Jackson on the tackle. Two-minute warning hits, and the Chiefs can't convert. They end up getting to second and 20 after pass interference on Demetrius Harris was called. Smith hit Harris with the line of scrimmage, picked up 6. 3rd and 14, Reed milked the play clock and called the Chiefs' second timeout. They're on 3rd and 14 with a minute and 7 seconds left. A bubble screen to Wilson was tackled after a gain of 9, and the punt team came out here. The Chiefs punt, the punt was perfectly covered, and the Falcons had a minute starting from the 20-yard line. And then on first down, Eric Berry read the play the whole way, picked off Matt Ryan, and brought it 37 yards back for the touchdown. Just an unbelievable play. So I know we have the takes and takeaways coming up here in a minute, and a bunch of you asked me about Eric Berry, rightfully so. And I'll talk about it now a tiny bit. Before the season, I said the Chiefs should have franchise tagged Sean Smith, not Eric Berry. I said I did not want to see a long term deal for Eric Berry. Paying a safety that much money, playing a non playmaking safety that much money, was absolutely out of the question for me. And it still is. Paying a non-playmaking safety $11 million a year is just throwing money into a giant pit. A pit when you have a cap on it. You have a salary cap to deal with. You cannot pay a guy who's not making big plays $11 million a year. You just can't do it. But that doesn't describe Eric Berry anymore. Eric Berry this year has made plays that he hasn't made before. Before this season, Eric Berry was a good safety, was a good deep linebacker type of safety. That guy doesn't deserve $11 million of your salary cap. Having a deep linebacker type of safety is a nice luxury. It's a nice thing to have, but you can't overpay for that. That's not that expensive in the NFL. That's not what Eric Berry is right now. Right now, Eric Berry is making, like, big plays every couple of games. He is changing the flow of the game. And he obviously did it twice against the Falcons. Can't wait to talk about the pick, too. That's a different thing. Eric Berry is a different player right now. And last year was a great story. Having him come back from his cancer treatment was a great story. He played pretty well. Comeback player of the year, that's fine. But it was great. But he was a fine player. He played well. But right now he's just doing different things. I still have concerns about giving him a long-term deal after this season. I really do. Just because I feel like even if this is his best season, it's not close. But I don't know if we can expect him to start getting better, to improve on this. I don't know how much time he has left making these kind of plays, because there is some flukiness to making big plays like this. And he still struggles sometimes, and this is going to sound, you're going to hate this. He still struggles sometimes in pass coverage and even playing the ball. Before this pick, sometime during this game, actually, there was a deep pass where he got a 40-yard defensive pass interference penalty early on in this game. And I said at the time, if that was Marcus Peters, I think he would have intercepted it. And for Eric Berry, it was a 40-yard penalty. There are still definite flaws in Eric Berry's game. But if you're going to buy in to the Chiefs having some sort of non-quantifiable playmaking ability, you can't say the Chiefs have that without Eric Berry this year. He's been absolutely tremendous. So what does this mean for a long-term deal for Eric Berry? I don't know yet. I'm going to need the rest of this season to decide where I land on, does Berry deserve a long-term deal? Not does he deserve. Sure, he deserves it, whatever that means. Should the Chiefs be the team to give Eric Berry a long-term deal? I don't know yet. Ask me again, hopefully, after the Super Bowl. But right now, of course I was wrong about not giving him the franchise tag. Of course that would have been the worst decision. I would still like for the Chiefs to have had Sean Smith this whole time. He struggled in Oakland, but I think he would have been by far the best option opposite Marcus Peters of these Chiefs corners. I think in this same system, he would have thrived again. I really believe that. But he would have been very expensive to keep for a long-term deal. And I think I still would have signed him and then franchised Eric Berry. And maybe that signing would have been wrong. I don't know. But if I only kept one of those guys, I would have franchised Sean Smith. I would have absolutely franchised Sean Smith and let Eric Berry walk and invest elsewhere in that safety position. And if the Chiefs had not kept Eric Berry for this season, this team, really, I don't think there's any question in my mind. This team would not be 9-3. I just don't think that's even questionable. So Eric Berry's had an absolutely incredible type of season. And I think somebody was tweeting, I can't remember who it was. Somebody tweeted, they thought it was interesting that the Chiefs have three Defensive Player of the Year candidates on their roster, and none of them are the actual best player on their defense. Eric Berry, Marcus Peters, and Dee Ford are all Defensive Player of the Year contenders. Dee Ford's not going to get it. And Eric Berry, I think, has not actually been even as valuable as Marcus Peters. Marcus Peters is unbelievable. Not only whenever he gets targeted, but the reason he doesn't get targeted. He's becoming Darrell Revis. Just wide throw at him. And when you do throw at him, you're not going to win very often. But none of those guys are even the best player on the defense. Because when Justin Houston is on, he's Von Miller. He's an elite pass rusher. So, I mean, there's just... Man, if the Chiefs have a healthy defense, at this point, and again, this is something I've never said about Eric Berry, so if you think I'm still too negative, hear me say this, please. They've got a top five safety, and a top five pass rusher, and a top five corner. And then maybe another top 10 pass rusher, depending on what you think about Dee Ford. And a top five inside linebacker, because Derek Johnson's amazing and ageless. And apparently an offense that can occasionally score 30 points. All right, man. I'm having a hard time not buying in. So the Chiefs get that touchdown on that. There's my Eric Berry answer for the questions I'll get in a little bit. Eric Berry then creates the touchdown there. Chiefs take the lead, 20-13. The Falcons actually push it right back down the field and line up at halftime for a 59-yard field goal attempt from Matt Bryant, and it is good as time expires. So the Chiefs go into the half 20-16 with the lead there. Cannot have any possible problem with that score. Then after halftime, the Chiefs, D'Anthony Thomas, I'm going to go through this every play of this drive because this was bizarre. D'Anthony Thomas gets out to the 36-yard line. The Chiefs have the ball with the lead for the first time. First down, Ware gets stuffed by Tyson Jackson for a loss of 4. Second and 14, a largely unblocked screen to Spencer Ware picked up 6. Then on 3rd and 8, Smith goes back to throw, throws an out to Tyreek Hill, goes for 7, which is infuriating. And even here, it was 4th and a yard and a half. Andy Reid brought out Ja Reid. And I was thinking, man, the Chiefs should go for this here. You're up by 4 points on the road against, in my mind, at least at the time, against the better team. You can pick up a yard and a half against this defense. Bring out Ja Reid and go get that yard and a half. So the Chiefs do. And it makes Atlanta call a timeout, which, by the way, later in the game would be very important. This was a great move by Andy Reid. So they brings out Ja Reid, and the Falcons, I think, probably assumed they would actually end up punting but didn't want to give the Chiefs a chance, because if they would have run that play, I believe the Chiefs actually had a play there. I really do. I think Andy Reid said, hey, go run this play, but wait a second, see if we can get him to call a timeout. I think they had a play there because they would have gotten it, because the Falcons' defense was completely lost. So the Falcons are forced to call a timeout, and then the Chiefs bring out the punt team. And I was bummed out, but then they did something incredible. The snap went to Albert Wilson, who went right back up the middle. Wilson was lined up as the personal protector. So he just gets the snap and then just runs in a straight line. It was perfectly blocked. And Albert Wilson took it 55 yards to the house. Perfect snap and opening block from James Winchester. The whole unit absolutely crushed it. The punt return team never saw it coming. The offensive line, all the blocking was perfect. The snap was perfect. And man, I wanted them to go for it on fourth and one, and I was absolutely cool with the fake punt call. I feel like those work. I think the success rate on fake punts on fourth and one or so is pretty high, because only the offensive line knows what's going on. In fact, Alex Smith didn't know the Chiefs were doing that, and Dustin Colquitt said he didn't know there was going to be a fake punt call, which, you know, makes it look extra realistic, I guess, because Colquitt thought he was going to be punting there. But man, I thought, again, the success rate very high. I never could have guessed the result of that. It was just incredible. Just incredible. A beautiful play by Albert Wilson. By just any hesitation in that whole play, the offensive line there parted like the Red Sea. But if he hesitates at all, he's probably getting tripped up a whole lot sooner, if he even gets the first down at all. Again, the direct snap, perfect. The blocking, perfect. The call, perfect. The execution, perfect. 55-yard fake punt, rushing touchdown for Albert Wilson. I mean, come on. How do you lose it? If you have a 55-yard fake punt rushing touchdown from Albert Wilson, how do you lose that game? You can't lose a game when that happens. It's not allowed. So it's 27-16 Chiefs there. Just incredible. The Falcons get the ball back, and Julio Jones beats Steven Nelson for a 19-yard gain on 3rd and 6. And the Falcons move a little bit, but then they get to 3rd and 10. The Falcons complete the pass to get to the 10, and it's 4th and 1 from the 10-yard line after these chunks of yardage down the field. And here on 4th and 1 from the 10, Matt Ryan rolled out to his right. The Chiefs got pressure with Ramiq Wilson, and Frank Zombo had great coverage on Devonta Freeman for a turnover on downs, and the Chiefs get the ball right back. I tweeted at the time, aggressiveness breeds aggressiveness in NFL games. The Chiefs were aggressive. They converted 4th and 1 and got a touchdown. They converted 4th and 1 with a fake punt and a touchdown. The Chiefs pushed the Falcons to an uncomfortable place, and it paid off again, and I love it. When you're aggressive and it's working, when you believe in your own aggressiveness, when you are aggressive first, it makes the other guys also get aggressive. And the Falcons were not prepared for that. They did not want to be that kind of team, and it didn't work. It was fantastic. The Chiefs get the ball back, and they make a couple of nice plays. First down, Smith checked it to Kelce on the bootleg. He took it for 19 yards after the catch for a 19-yard gain on first down. They get to 3rd and 10 and actually convert again. Smith hit Hill about 5 yards deep, and Hill turned it into a 25-yard gain. He just ran away from two dudes. And then the Chiefs get to 3rd and 12 and a false start it was 3rd and 2. 3rd and 2 was a draw to Charkandrick West, which was gross. Holding was called on Eric Fisher, which moved it to 3rd and 12, and then a false start on Eric Fisher moved it to 3rd and 17. And then on 3rd and 17, Dwight Freeney, by the way, he's in the league still, Dwight Freeney jumped and moved it back to 3rd and 12. A screen to Kelce picked up 3 yards, and it was miserable. It was a bad drive, killed by penalties. And the Chiefs punt actually goes into the end zone. Then a sack, it's a movement backwards and forwards, ended up getting the Falcons some momentum. A deep pass to Julio Jones for 21, and then 20 more got the Chiefs on their heels. Fast forward to 3rd and 2, Freeman gets the first down, then runs for another 13 yards. Second and 8, D Ford and Derek Johnson combine for a loss of 1. Then on 3rd and 9, D Ford jumps. 3rd and 4, Taylor Gabriel wide open gets to the 1, then touchdown Devonta Freeman. And the Falcons decide to go for 2, because at that point, It's 27-22. The two-point conversion was not good, although this was not the most interesting missed two-point conversion by the Falcons. Derek Johnson had great coverage there, and it was 27-22 Chiefs. And the Chiefs started at the 21-yard line. Fast forward here to Smith to Wilson, gets for 8 yards, gets the Chiefs to 3rd-and-2. Wilson took a couple of big hits and held on to it there. Also, the play before, Chris Conley got another deep target, could not get back for the ball. It wasn't a great throw, but Conley cannot make a play when he has the physical advantage. It was really, really disappointing. 3rd-and-2, Spencer Ware was wide open out of the backfield, and Alex Smith just missed him. Overthrown, it was going to be a touchdown and a relatively easy one. Not a perfect throw because he was on the move, and Spencer Ware was running away from him, obviously. And Alex Smith was rolling left, which is hard, but you've got to make that throw. That could have iced the game there. And Smith just missed him. If the Chiefs would have lost this game, that would have been the story for most Kansas City media, I think. Even in a game when everything was going right, Alex Smith cost them there. Ultimately, did not end up costing them. But that was bad. The Chiefs punt and the Falcons drive. 3rd-and-9. Julio Jones comes back in after an injury. The Chiefs bring 5 against the Falcons. Matt Ryan runs for the first down after Tom Bahalili lost his contain. Gets the Falcons to 1st-and-goal. Matt Ryan goes to Justin Hardy in the end zone. It looked like a touchdown, but it was incomplete. Then on 2nd down, back to the middle to Robinson, where Eric Berry was in the middle zone. He and Peters were mad at each other afterwards, but ended up being a wide-open touchdown. And the Falcons took a lead here. They took a 1-point lead with a few minutes left. And they had to go for 2, which I think makes sense. You want to go for 2 and make it a 3-point game because the Chiefs' offense had been moving efficiently enough to where I genuinely think, no matter how this 2-point conversion goes, I think the Chiefs would have gotten a field goal if they would have needed just a field goal. They might have gotten a touchdown if this 2-point conversion would have been good. But what happened next, something that's literally never happened in the history of the NFL. The rule got changed pretty recently, I think, about returning extra points and 2-point conversions for your own points in the NFL. I think it's a pretty newly adopted NFL rule. It's always been the way in college, I think. But with a 1-point lead after the touchdown, Matt Ryan throws a pass, and Eric Berry picks it off and ran it back for the defensive 2-point conversion to take the lead, which has never happened. A pick 6 2-point conversion, or someone called on Twitter a tune-over, which I think is pretty funny. I like the tune-over. To take the lead never happened before on an interception. And the Chiefs all of a sudden are up by a point and have the ball against the Falcons in Atlanta. So the Chiefs get the ball, 1st and 10, a real nice handoff, went for 0 yards. Then Smith and Kelsey saved the day with a gain of 14, then Ware got shut down for nothing again. The clock is just running, though. Then Ware gains 4 yards, the Chiefs get to the 2-minute warning, and it's 3rd and 6. And this is a terrifying, I hated this part of the game, because it's the 2-minute warning is here. I think the Falcons have used all their timeouts at this point, and it's 3rd and 6. If you give the ball back to Atlanta, down by 1 point, I do not feel great. So, obviously, as always happens, as I always say, on 3rd and 6, you've got to throw a 5-yard pass to Albert Wilson. It always works, as it did here. Albert Wilson gets hit by Alex Smith across the middle for about 5.5 yards. Wilson gets it across the marker, and the Chiefs just started taking knees. 29-28 final. And the Falcons ran a lot more plays than the Chiefs did in this game. I can probably actually just find the actual statistic here, so I'm not giving you false information. Here's some amazing stats. The total yards numbers were pretty close. The Falcons had 418 yards on offense. The Chiefs had 389. The Falcons had 32 first downs. 32. And on ESPN it says for 66 total plays. I think I had 74 earlier based off the defensive snaps. I'm not sure what that discrepancy is. We're going to go ahead and use ESPN's team, ESPN's game stats, I suppose. The Falcons converted 60% of their third downs. The Chiefs converted 30% of theirs, 3 of 10 and 6 of 10. The Chiefs converted both fourth downs, though. But 66 plays for the Falcons and 32 first downs. That's unbelievable. 60 of those were from penalties. But that's unbelievable. I guess snaps includes penalties. There we go. That gets us to 72. And then maybe a couple of other things. I don't know why that happened. I'm not sure how that snap count difference is. But this, according to ESPN.com's box score, the Falcons ran 66 plays and picked up 32 first downs. The Chiefs ran 48 plays and picked up only 17 first downs. Almost half of, well, in this case, over half of the Falcons' plays were first downs. That's insane. That doesn't make any freaking sense. But what the Chiefs did, Alex Smith averaged over 10 yards per pass. Matt Ryan averaged only 8. Smith was sacked one time. Matt Ryan was sacked twice. Brandon Kiley at BK Sports Talk on Twitter said Alex Smith averaged more than 10 yards per pass attempt. That's the best day of any quarterback this season against Atlanta. Aaron Schatz said, although KC and Atlanta had similar yardage totals, KC had 1.8 yards per play compared to Atlanta's 6.3. But she said over 8 yards per play, averaged over 10 yards per pass attempt. That's not just par for the course against Atlanta. That's the best in the league this whole season against Atlanta. No quarterback this year has averaged more yards per attempt than Alex Smith against the Falcons. This was partially Alex Smith and Andy Reid just taking what the Falcons would give you. That's part of it. But it's not all of it. They had good days against a mediocre to bad defense. Really good days. Better than almost any team, if depending on the metric you're using, maybe the very best day. 266 yards passing for the Chiefs is fine by me whenever it gives you 10 yards per pass. Alex Smith was 21 for 25. Again, sacked only one time. No interceptions. The box score for this game for the Chiefs, he had one touchdown, a 91.2 QBR. That doesn't mean much in this game. But Matt Ryan was 22 for 34 for 297 yards, a touchdown and a pick. Alex Smith outplayed Matt Ryan. He did. Alex Smith just outplayed Matt Ryan in this game. And Albert Wilson actually led the team in rushing. My thought for this game is the Chiefs needed to control the ball on the ground some. The Chiefs disagreed with me. Because Spencer Ware only got 14 carries for only 29 yards here, and he got that rushing touchdown and a receiving touchdown in this game. Albert Wilson gets the other touchdown. Although I don't know why this has. Oh no, I understand now. Never mind. I'm bad at reading the internet sometimes. Travis Kelce gets 8 receptions for 140 yards, his third consecutive game with over 100 yards, which is the first time a tight end has done that since Jimmy Graham did it. I believe it was in 2013, I think I heard. It's been a long time since a tight end has had 3 straight games of 100 receiving yards or more. Kelce has now changed that history. He's done it 3 times in a row. Smith sacked only that one time, which was a fumble. Matt Ryan sacked twice, and the interception. Well, actually, 2 interceptions. The one on the pick 2 didn't count on his stat sheet. There's a pick 6 and a pick 2 for Matt Ryan. Out of his hand. And again, Alex Smith just outplayed Matt Ryan. The defense outplayed Atlanta's defense. The whole offense was better. I mean, it's just some really remarkable things here from this game. And I'm usually cautiously optimistic if I am optimistic at all. As we go ahead and transfer into your takes and takeaways, I'm not even cautiously optimistic anymore. I just feel great about where this team is right now. A whole lot of takes and a lot to take away from this game. Let's see what you had to say. I want to start with Ty DeClaire, who I think actually sent this in before the end of the game, which is kind of cheating, but this is absolutely something we're talking about. So we can diss him all we want, but this has been the Albert Wilson from 2014 in terms of his ability to step up when called on. Yeah, it totally has, and that's a guy we haven't seen at all this year, man. I mean, just the total Albert Wilson renewal game here was incredible. I can't call his coming out game because he already had his relevant making games early on in his career. But as far as this season, absolutely the revival of Albert Wilson. I don't know if I buy it as a long-term renewal. Jeremy Macklin's going to be back on Thursday and hopefully for the rest of the season, so he's going to lose some snaps back to Macklin. But man, just tremendous. Keyshawn Brown, Barry balled out today. Yeah, he did. Let's go to Miles, at Miles McLaren. an aggressive, risk-taking offense that knows the defense has their back was playing instead of a conservative offense relying on the defense. I thought this was such a smart summary of the nuanced differences in the way this Chiefs team can attack other offenses or other teams altogether. I don't know if I can say it better than that. Whenever the offense is taking risks and is playing aggressively, they can play that way knowing that the defense isn't going to let them down. And if they make a mistake, the defense can pick up some of the slack there. As opposed to an offense that is so afraid of making mistakes that they will be so conservative and hope that the defense will take over the game. It's a lot easier for an offense to win you a game than it is for defense to. But if you can play aggressively and know the defense is going to be able to have your back, as Miles said, you're in a much better place. I think that is a fantastic, fantastic example of the nuances between those two things. From Keyshawn Brown again. Alex, finally, catching Kelsey was actually catching. Albert Wilson, surprise. Bend but don't break defense. Andy, finally. And Eric Berry was epic. Hashtag homecoming. That's just so many positive things here. Jared Dunn, at Jared A. Dunn on Twitter. Alex Smith made one mistake. One. It feels good to say that. From Brad Hope, how far is that a horseshoe up the Chiefs' butt, and how can we keep it there until February? Honestly, I don't know. I feel like that would cause a lot of day-to-day process problems. I think maybe if they could just put it back before each game, maybe. I don't think having a horseshoe in your butt until February for, two more months, I don't think that would be good for you. I think that would be really difficult. From Keyshawn again, do you think Barry's earning a new deal with his play this season, making plays in coverage that I haven't seen from him before? Yeah, I talked about this earlier, so this is kind of unfair. But yeah, he's earning a new deal with somebody next season. I'm going to have to take the rest of this season and even the playoffs and even the offseason to maybe go back and try to reevaluate some more to see if I think the Chiefs should be the team to give him that new deal. But with what we've seen from him previously and from this year, Eric Berry's going to make a lot of money somewhere with his next contract. Ray Hines, at Big Turf Guy. So the defense and special teams won the day. How many points did the offense score against the Atlanta defense? The offense stayed out of the way. Good late on third down. The offense scored 13 points in this game, not counting any of the extra points, I think. I think it might be 14 with that. It was the Spencer Ware touchdown, no extra point. Spencer Ware touchdown, we're going to count the extra point there and say, yeah, you're at 13. And then the pick six and the extra point, so 14. And then Albert Wilson's and an extra point, but that was based off of a special team score, so we'll go ahead and leave that off. So say 14 points, and then 15 from the defense and special teams with the pick six and the punt return, the pick six and the fake punt and the pick two return and the extra point that goes with it. So there's your So the defense and special teams, obviously, you don't win this game without it, but that's been how the Chiefs have won here. The same thing the offense stayed out of the way, I think, is kind of interesting. I don't think it gives them enough credit because, as the next sentence, as they were good late on third down. The offense did what it needed to do here. From Blake Johns, at B_Johns35, my actual friend, my real-life friend, Blake. Thanks, Blake. Said, how much money can we hand Eric Berry, and can I do it personally? It's going to be a lot of money. It's going to be a lot of money, and Clark Hunt's not going to let you touch it. From Rodney Green, at G_Rod913, Barry showed up huge today. The defense gave up a lot of yards and penalties. Cut those down, we can beat Oakland again. From Bubart, at Niner1001, if we can get Macklin 90% from last year, the offense is less of a concern. Absolutely. So I'm very excited to see on Thursday what the offense looks like with the return of Jeremy Macklin. Getting those pieces back together, we're going to finally get an actual look at what this offense was supposed to look like as everybody else kind of hits their stride a little bit. From at Three Gravy Cats, Chiefs remind me so much of the Royals, just clutch down in the stretch, especially the defense. Yeah, they do, and I have a problem with that because, again, I can't quantify what it means to keep the line moving. I had a hard time figuring out what made the Royals good. Not what made them good. We know what made them good. What made them great? What made them a World Series winner? And it was that sort of just like kept the line moving, kind of this clutch gene that doesn't really exist in any sort of tangible way, so it's difficult. From Austin Hall, at Austin_92_Hall, they're like a real-life friend. He said, I'll be there at the game. He's going to the Raiders game, so I don't have a voice left, but it will be worth it. Yeah, it will. I can't imagine an atmosphere in Arrowhead that's been louder than Thursday night football against the Raiders is going to be for the lead in the AFC West. from Derek Vaughn at D_Vaughn88. Pay the man. If his coverage ability was a big setback, I'd say he's answered the bell. Jets, Panthers, Broncos, and Falcons would all agree. Yeah, absolutely. I still have that question of his like play by play coverage. I had this question with Marcus Peters early on too. This does not mean he cannot make this happen, but it was just my concern. And it's still a little bit of a concern. Is can he be a consistent guy in coverage? Can he shut down a top tight end whenever he's asked to? I don't know about that yet. I'm not sure. But his big playmaking ability is off the charts so far this year. Also from Derek, Terrence Mitchell should be out there every Sunday. He's better than Gaines and Acker. That's my number one takeaway. I remember that was going to be here, so I didn't talk about Terrence Mitchell much before now because I think this is worth some time. Terrence Mitchell was, if you don't know, he was added to the practice squad recently. I think he's a practice squad guy. He was brought up recently, I think. He's probably the fifth guy the Chiefs have tried. At right corner, at the opposite corner from Marcus Peters. Obviously, it was Phillip Gaines first, and then DJ White got a bunch of snaps. You could count Kavari Russell as getting a shot before Steven Nelson, Kenneth Acker, even Ron Parker got some run out there. Terrence Mitchell had a pretty nice game here. I think he was also getting plenty of safety help whenever he was out there, and I think I would still give Phillip Gaines the leg up. But DJ White getting no snaps in this game was really strange. Terrence Mitchell holding his own was encouraging. I certainly think he's better than Acker. At this point, though, as far as the guy who I would want opposite Marcus Peters, I think I would have it go Gaines. I would like Steven Nelson to stay at the slot. So for keeping Steven Nelson there, I would have him later on. But if we're going to just say, if I was going to rank the corners on this Chiefs team, I think I would still go Peters, Gaines, Nelson, White, then Mitchell. The Chiefs disagree on that, though, because, again, White did not get the snaps yesterday, so, or on Sunday. From Ty DeClaire, said, very opportunistic these past 2 weeks, not dominant on either side of the ball, but KC does what they must to win. And I kind of like that everyone is sort of accepting that that's just how the Chiefs are right now, but it also scares me. It really does. From Michael Dewey, said, I haven't watched the game yet, but man, our offense is terrible. It looked the same again against the best defense and the worst defense. Just watch the highlights. We can't rely on the 9 points from the defense every week. You can't rely on the defense making a bunch of giant plays every week, but I also think that's, again, not giving the offense enough credit. I think if Eric Berry doesn't get that pick two, the Chiefs still win that game because of their offense. They converted on third downs in a way we had not seen so far this season. The offense looked really nice here against a crummy defense, but it did exactly what it had to do. I'm just not that concerned about the offense. I mean, I'm still concerned about it, I guess. But if they stay aggressive, I'm not. I'm more concerned about Andy Reid than I am the ability of the offense, and I'm becoming to get less concerned about Andy Reid here. From Kyle Heatherton, at Kai Heatherton, said, I agree with your Eric Berry take before the season in terms of his contract, but I've changed my opinion. This team needs him. Your thoughts? Yeah, the other thing that we haven't talked about yet is does the team need him in that question of, is he, you know, the heart and soul of the team? Is he the backbone of the team? Is he kind of these intangible things? And I'm starting to think maybe so. Like, and this is something that's been talked about by guys in the locker room. I don't think players needlessly pump up other players as being the heart and soul of a team. Unless they actually mean that. I don't know why you would. I don't hear anybody doing that about, you know, Alex Smith, even the quarterback. People go like, oh, he's a good leader. You know what we need. They'll say stuff to support the quarterback. But people, the whole locker room is in love with Eric Berry. So I think as kind of an intangible thing is a huge part of it. And yes, he's made crazy plays this year. And again, I am not, also from Jamie Jackson at @JJackson_Chiefs. He's been on me about Eric Berry and Sean Smith for a long time now, and I'm eating the crow. So two games this year, Berry's led us to a win with his pass defense. Is he still in your mind not worth paying over Smith? Yes. Obviously, as I said earlier, the franchise tag thing, the Chiefs absolutely made the right move. And this version of the Chiefs needs Eric Berry this year, and they need this version of Eric Berry this year. Something that, again, we haven't seen yet. The gamble of franchising him was absolutely worth it. The Chiefs also didn't think it was worth giving him a long term deal this offseason because they wanted to also see this year. So I am totally fine, totally standing by not paying him before this season because I don't think that gamble would have been worth it, even though it may have paid off. Now it's a matter of, there's not even a question anymore of, was it better to franchise tag him than Sean Smith, or was it worth it to franchise tag Eric Berry? Resounding yes. Resounding yes. Now the only question is, what's the future of Eric Berry? What's his next deal look like? And at this point, if I'm the Chiefs, I might have him as a higher priority over Dontari Poe, because Dontari Poe's back issues and the depth of the defensive line, where I'm less and less interested in re-signing Poe and becoming more interested in keeping Eric Berry around. But if he's going to demand $12 million a year, he's going to have to continue to play like Ed Reed, where just every game you're waiting for him to get his pick. It's kind of bizarre. Miles, if Berry doesn't pick the 2-point attempt, was your over under the Casey drives for the game winning score? Yeah, I do think that the Chiefs went go and score and win the game, even if Berry does not get that pick two there. From Justin Henderson at Justin C. Hind said, fun fact for you, the NFC South is 7-0 at home versus the AFC West. That's bizarre. That is a fun fact. Derek Vaughn, when should we expect the show? Right now. About an hour ago, you probably started listening to it. Ryan Miller at KC Royal 5280. Alberta Gator Arms Wilson, best game of his career? I mean, it's got to be. It just absolutely has to be. There's just not another option any better than that. From Dre Stratton at Dre_Stratton. Looks like Alex had more freedom at the line. Loved the aggressiveness. Looks like all the Georgia products had great games, all besides Conley, who looked like he could be a burner, just had the jitter drops. And then, so realistically, how many wins do you think we end up with? AFC West crown, Poe taking hometown discount to stay? I don't see Poe taking hometown discount. I think he would love to get money here if he can, but I think the idea of a hometown discount, I think, would be very, very small. The other question there, AFC West crown and realistic number of victories? I mean, I think you could say that the Chiefs realistically have a 13-3 season, as they currently sit at 9-3. Just because they're better than the rest of the teams they're going to play this year, I think. The team they might not be better than is the Raiders, but if they're equally matched, I'll talk about here in just a little bit, winning games on the road on Thursday night is really, really hard against evenly matched teams, and the Raiders being able to do that, I think, is a real question mark. If we leave the Raiders game up in the air so I can give you my prediction officially in a little bit, I think they beat the Titans at home. I think they beat the Broncos at home on Sunday night, on Christmas night, and I think they go to San Diego and win. I think at San Diego might be the game I'm most afraid of, just because, again, road games are hard. And beating the Broncos at home is not going to be easy. In fact, I think those are the two most difficult games left. But I think, realistically, the Chiefs are going to win 12 or 13 games this year. I really do. That is not me looking through rose-colored glasses. I'm usually pretty happy to be calling for a little bit of self-limiting optimism. And I'm just not here. It's from Calvin Esslinger. So do you feel bad for saying Eric Berry shouldn't have gotten the franchise tag over Sean Smith? Because I do. No, I don't. I took the information that I had, and I made a call, and I was wrong. Leave me alone. Dang it. Do you feel bad? Because I do. Oh, God. I think that's everything. I don't think I can top that. I think everybody's got... Oh, Jamie Jackson also asked, what's a contract you'd be comfortable with for Eric Berry? And I don't know yet. I'm gonna have to push that back to the off season when I can actually do some research. More than $10 million a year, though, for more than 3 years is terrifying. And I think it would have to be probably in that $40 to $50 million guaranteed range. And that's just a ton of money. I don't know if I would be comfortable I wouldn't be comfortable with more than that. Would I give him more than that? You would have to. And I wouldn't love it, though. Back from Ray Hines again, a win over an elite MVP candidate quarterback on the road changes how I see this team. To me, that's a sign of a real winning team. Yes, I agree completely. From Justin Henderson again. You had this when the schedule came out, right? Week 10, at Carolina, win. 11, home. Tampa Bay, loss. 12, at Denver, win. 13, at Atlanta, win. Yeah, no, I might have had the inverse of that, actually. From Miles again, it annoys me that the media is saying KC only won because of the pick two. There were 3 minutes left when that was happening. And yes, I agree, I think the Chiefs would have won that game even without the pick two, but winning it that way was so much more fun. And then everything else is about this upcoming Raiders game, which I've heard from other people. I've heard the opinion that this Raiders game might just be an important one. Oakland Raiders at Kansas City Chiefs on Thursday Night Football. I hope you had time to get to this part of the show because it's a real long show and it's a pretty late in the week show. I'm doing this Wednesday morning, so hopefully you've gotten here. Man, I'm excited about this game. Here's the first reason I'm excited about this game. The Chiefs beat the Raiders already. Second reason I'm excited about this game, BJ Kissel had this tweet, and everyone's talked about it since then. The Chiefs have, according to Kissel, there are no injuries to report per Andy Reid. Everybody will practice for the Chiefs. Huge news. Jeremy Maclin is back. Justin Houston's healthy. Dee Ford is healthy. Tom Bahali is having an off day because of his knees, because he's old, but that's normal. The whole secondary is there. Gaines is healthy. Everybody who's not on IR is going to play in this game. 53 healthy guys. And I was skeptical before the Falcons game that the Chiefs may have rested Jeremy Maclin for the Raiders game, because I thought the Falcons game was important also, because you would have to be betting on the Raiders losing again after Thursday if they would have lost to the Falcons. Chiefs took care of business, and now that he's completely off the report now, I do think that both Gaines and Maclin, they decided that both of them would really benefit from the few extra days rest and not having to go through the car crash of an NFL game just 4 days before the next one. Now, I am afraid of what it's going to look like for Maclin to come back. Maclin's been out for a long time, and Dee Ford coming back from the hamstring injury was very limited on Sunday, so I don't know how big of a factor Maclin is going to be, but he will at least be on the field. At least the Raiders defense has to acknowledge his presence. Also, back on December 2nd, I believe, the Raiders put DJ Hayden, their cornerback, on injured reserve with a hamstring injury, ending his season. And that leaves a big hole for the Raiders. He was the 12th overall pick in 2013. This is the last year of his rookie contract, according to ESPN.com. In 11 games this year, Hayden had 37 tackles with forced fumbles, 6 passes defended, no picks. But he was the nickel corner this year, basically the Sean Smith. He also moved outside he was basically the Steven Nelson of this current team. He also played outside whenever Sean Smith was missing time with an injury early on for the Raiders. This is a meaningful loss for the Raiders, and I think if you put, especially if you want to try to deal with Travis Kelce in the slot, Tyreek Hill in the slot, move Jeremy Maclin to the slot, you're going to be dealing with a fourth string corner trying to cover anybody who lands up in the slot for the Chiefs. So another boost there for the Chiefs offense as everyone's coming back. And more little nuggets here, I think, to prepare you for where my mindset is. So Maclin's participated fully in practice. He's expected to be completely good to go on Thursday. Matt Verderam said that the game time temperature on Thursday for the Chiefs versus Raiders is supposed to be 10 degrees. Then from @CoverGirl678 on Twitter, @NatVerderam said that Carr has played in one game in his career below 40 degrees. That game was at Arrowhead last year. He lost. Arrowhead Pride said Alex Smith's offense averages nearly 30 points per game against the Raiders. He's 8-1 with an 18-3 touchdown to pick ratio. I don't have any more stats or any more nuggets than that. I just want to talk about this game. We've seen the Chiefs beat the Raiders in Oakland already. And yes, that was a few weeks ago. So there are differences in the team. Mostly that the Chiefs are healthier and the Raiders are more injured right now. They held the Raiders to 10 points in Oakland while putting up 26 of their own. It was a big Spencer Ware day. He had 24 carries for 131 yards and a touchdown. Derek Carr never got much going. Jeremy Maclin led the team in receiving, but he only had 49 yards here. Alex Smith wasn't doing much back in that game. Again, if you can devote yourself to the run game a little bit, the Chiefs have failed to do that for a while, but now the run game is including more and more of Tyreek Hill getting some sweeps to offset Spencer Ware, getting the ball up the gut some. And then the game is going to be cold. And the Raiders are not used to playing in the cold. This is going to be the coldest game Derek Carr ever plays, and I think has ever played in, I think. At least second coldest, I believe. Amari Cooper is going to be always going to be the biggest threat on the field whenever the Raiders are there. And Derek Carr is an MVP candidate, and the Raiders are very, very good. I do think the Raiders are a real contender, a real threat. But I've said since before the season that the Chiefs are going to come into this season and beat the Raiders twice. Because they had the game at Oakland after the bye week, which Andy Reid just doesn't lose after the bye week very often. And then they had the Raiders at home on Thursday night. And if you're evenly matched teams, it's really, really hard to go win an upset game on the road on Thursday night. It just doesn't happen very often. a real upset. And in this case, the Chiefs, and I think the Chiefs and the Raiders are evenly matched teams. I think the Raiders have a much better offense, the Chiefs have a much better defense. If you're going to put this at a neutral site, again, considering the Chiefs have already run on one on the road, and I just where I think this team is right now, if this game was a neutral site game, I'd say I think the Chiefs win this game by a few points. But in Kansas City, on prime time at night, with Arrowhead rocking, with the cold and the noise getting into Derek Carr's head, and the whole Raiders offense, if the Chiefs can contain Khalil Mack, which I think they will because they have weapons finally, they have the full emergence of Tyreek Hill on offense, they have the return of Jeremy Maclin, I think Alex Smith has got his confidence back, the offensive line has been playing pretty well. Contain Khalil Mack, and then beat up on Sean Smith, like, I'm trying to find reasons to be afraid of this game, to be really skeptical of it. And I'm just looking around, wondering. And the Raiders didn't have Latavius Murray in the game against the Chiefs. But Devonta Freeman ran the ball pretty effectively because the Chiefs were afraid of Julio Jones going deep. And even if they were to give a bunch of points, because the Raiders have a similar threat with Amari Cooper, The Chiefs just handled Julio Jones after one drive. I think they'll handle Amari Cooper the same way. Latavius Murray is not as good as Devonta Freeman. He's just not that same guy. Latavius Murray is nice. He's a fine running back, but I'm not nearly as afraid of the Raiders running game as I was the Falcons. I'm not as afraid of the Raiders passing game as I am with the Falcons. Julio Jones is better than Amari Cooper. Maybe Michael Crabtree is better than whoever the Falcons want to have their second guy be. But whenever you have Marcus Peters covering the second guy, or you're double teaming either Amari Cooper or Julio Jones, or vice versa, I'm just not that worried about it. And if the Chiefs can get Peters on Cooper more often, all that one-on-one matchup is fine with me, with as long as there's a little bit of safety help behind him. Then you're able to actually devote some time to go get pressure. This is going to be the first game, I think, fingers crossed, this is going to be the first time when we see Dee Ford and Justin Houston healthy on the field together. And Chris Jones has been so good. Dontari Poe should be ready to go. The other guys that have been going through that rotation have been very effective. But you let Chris Jones and Dee Ford and Justin Houston get a full game of trying to get at Derek Carr. Good luck. Good luck getting more than 10 points this time. I feel like the expectation is for me to be concerned. I think across the board the expectation is for Chiefs fans to be concerned, and you should be a little bit worried just because this game is so important. Because I think, again, if the Chiefs win this game, I think they're the 2 seed in the AFC. The winner, let me rephrase that. The winner of this game is the 2 seed in the AFC. I think that's how this plays out. The winner of this game gets a bye week and home field advantage against whoever comes out of that wild card round. And you could give me the Steelers at home, you could give me the Raiders at home. Any team not from New England could come to Arrowhead after the Chiefs have a bye week in the playoffs to go to the AFC Championship game. And I'll tell you right now, I'll take the Chiefs to win that game unless there's some catastrophic injury. Andy Reid is so good coming off of a bye. How would you not want... So this game, that's what this game is so important. Home field advantage and a bye week. Hugely important. Rest up, more time to plan. Even though I guess you wouldn't know exactly which team you would be playing. You could guess, I guess. Whatever. If nothing else, just the week off. NFL games. I love Dan Le Batard's show on ESPN Radio. He says all the time, he says, I don't think we understand what we're watching in the NFL most of the time. Like, the physicality these guys go through, like, we watch it and go like, oh man, that's nuts. But I don't think we really understand how hard that is on a body. A bye week before the playoffs is crazy. Hugely important. This game is hugely important. And whoever wins this game is getting that spot. That's my prediction right now. Because even if the Chiefs win this game and then lose later, as long as they end up with the even record with the Raiders, they're going to get it. No one else in the AFC is catching up. So what do I actually think happens here? I think the defense does what the defense has done for weeks now and makes plays. I think the offense looks good enough. I think I think Jeremy Maclin's return gives a little bit more confidence to Alex Smith, who's already gaining confidence with Tyreek Hill. Last time against the Raiders, Tyreek Hill had 2 receptions for 20 yards, and he didn't have a carry. Tyreek Hill is a real part of this offense now. Also, Travis Kelce had 3 receptions for 32 yards. Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill have become huge parts of this offense. Spencer Ware has to get his carries again to keep the Raiders guessing. It's going to be freezing. I think Alex Smith is much more comfortable in this weather than Derek Carr is going to be. The most comfortable guy on the field is going to be Spencer Ware. Free him up. And I'm just trying. I'm trying to be unconfident. I'm trying to have some concerns here. But the defense is going to hold this Raiders offense in check, and I know it's really good. I know that the Raiders just came back in the second half and beat the Bills in a game where the Bills were up by halftime. I think the Raiders had 9 points in the first half against the Bills, and they won that game 38-24. I know. Here's what the Raiders have done since the Chiefs game, okay? This is crazy. If you want to get concerned, here's how you get concerned. Against the Chiefs, the Raiders scored 10 points. Since then, here are their point totals. 33, 30, 30, 27, 35, 38. And those are not against pushovers. One of those is at Tampa Bay versus the Broncos versus the Texans versus the Panthers versus the Bills. The only bad defenses there might be the Jags and Bucks, but the Chiefs couldn't score against the Buccaneers. But I'm buying into what I've seen from the Chiefs more than I'm buying into what I've seen from the Raiders against other teams. There have only been, 2 games this year when the Raiders have scored less than 20 points. They scored less than 20 in their win at Tennessee and in their loss at home versus the Chiefs. 17 against the Titans, 10 against the Chiefs. Those are the outliers on a team that's won that many games. Those are the outliers. They lost to the Falcons whenever we only scored 28. But I look at the Chiefs right now, and I go, man, they finally got a full array of weapons. They're finally using Hill and Kelce right. They're finally getting Jeremy Maclin back. They're underusing Spencer Ware. So if they need to lean on the run game a little bit, he is there to pick up some more slack. Alex Smith is finally looking confident again. The defense looks tremendous. I think the Chiefs win again. I've been saying since the preseason, I'm not backing down now. I think the Chiefs win this game and ultimately end up taking the 2 seed in the AFC. I think the Chiefs beat the Raiders at home, and this would be a huge letdown. But both the Chiefs and the Raiders played big, emotional, high-scoring games last week. The difference is that the Raiders have to travel from Oakland to Kansas City and play on a short week. The Chiefs also have to play on a short week. They're traveling from Atlanta to Kansas City, I suppose, in a way, but obviously got here sooner than the Raiders would have. I can't come up with a reason to tell you why the Chiefs don't win this game. I think their offense is going to do plenty against a crummy Raiders defense. I think Alex Smith and Andy Reid are on the same page, and it's a good page for once. They're using their weapons right. The defense has been suffocating and making big plays. Go ahead and challenge Marcus Peters. He'll make a play. Challenge Eric Berry. He'll make a play. Challenge anybody. And just as long as the Chiefs protect their second corner, let Justin Houston and Dee Ford get to you. If Houston and Ford are healthy and are getting pressure, every quarterback they play is going to make a mistake. Every quarterback they play is going to let a ball loft a little bit too high up in the air because they're about to get put into a pain sandwich, and then Eric Berry is going to find the ball, pick it off, and run it back. That's just how this team is winning right now. That's just what's going on. This is just actually happening. My gut instinct, logically, as I break down the matchups, I go, oh, the Chiefs squeak by here. My gut instinct right now is this is a real statement game. A real statement game for the Chiefs. Like, this is almost as embarrassing as the win they had in Oakland. I think the offense is probably sick of hearing that they're not doing enough. I think the defense is probably sick of hearing that they're a fluke and just making fluky big plays. And maybe that doesn't really matter. That's so intangible. But there's so many things about this Chiefs team that is completely intangible. Again, logically, I think I want to say the Chiefs get out to an early lead. The Raiders come pushing back. and then it's close at the end, but the Chiefs make the last play. But really, I have the gut feeling of maybe the Chiefs give up an early score again, as they always do. Bob Sutton adjusts. The offense pushes back. They have the lead at halftime, and they never give it back again. I think the Chiefs are up 14-10 at halftime and end the game 28-17. I think the Chiefs win this game by double digits. So sure, 28-17. Why not? Why not? This team is better than the Raiders. It's at home on a short week. The Raiders' offense is high-powered, but I think it's going to stutter because they're playing a high-powered defense. There's a difference between a defense that makes sense to be good, that has a lot of good pieces to it. Again, the Raiders scored 30 points at home against the Broncos. That's a high-powered defense. But everybody else, the Bills, Panthers, and Texans, those are all defenses that have some pieces. They have enough to stop you. But the Broncos and Chiefs have playmaking defenses. And I think the Chiefs' playmaking defense is going to go blow for blow with the Raiders' playmaking offense. But that the Chiefs' offense is going to actually be the matchup problem here. Because I will take in a vacuum, I'll say the Chiefs and Raiders defense, Chiefs defense, Raiders offense, pretty much blow for blow, slight advantage of the Chiefs, especially at home on a cold night. Chiefs offense, step above the Raiders defense, a clean step above. I think the Chiefs win this game by 11 points on their way to being the 2 seed in the AFC, and I feel pretty good about it. That's going to do it for another mega episode of the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on ArrowheadAddict.com and on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Joshua Briscoe, and this show would not be happening if it wasn't for the people who support the show at Patreon.com. At Patreon.com, you can give a little bit of money each month to help keep this show rolling strong. That's what these people have done. Ty Declare at Ty Declare 44, Andy Simpson, Randy Singh at Randy_Singh_, Ray Hines at Big Turf Guy, Derek Vaughn at D_Vaughn88 are all giving $20 a month to keep this show running. $10 group is Christine Roadlander at C Roadlander and Todd Sullivan at Tito Solovino, and the faithful $5 group, Josh Beadle. I can't say thank you enough for listening to this show. I cannot tell you how excited I am for the Raiders-Chiefs game, for the AFC West, for the 2 seed in the AFC, maybe the 1 seed if the Patriots slip up a little bit. I cannot wait to talk to you after this Raiders game. I have a really good feeling about it, which means I'm probably going to get crushed by my high expectations, but for once I'm just going to let it happen and try to get through Thursday night. Have fun watching that game. I'll talk to you then. Bye, Mom.